This is the websites.ca podcast, where we help Canadian small businesses build and maintain an effective website and online presence.
Hello again, everybody. This is Sean Corbett, websites.ca marketing. Today, we're going to talk about web design, but we're not going to talk about it from sort of the frou-frou, fancy, you have to be creative and unique angle that would probably put you to sleep. We're going to talk about web design in a way that makes your business look more professional and basically helps sort of persuade and convert more visitors to customers. So I'm joined by the websites.ca head designer, Paul Renault, today. And Paul is going to talk a little bit about sort of what we do at websites.ca to achieve those goals. But first, I wanted to just ask Paul, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
Oh, well, it's nice to be here. In the 90s, I was in art school. I was interested in art as a kid in high school, and I pursued a degree there. And then after I left school, the web was sort of coming up as a thing, and I was looking for a career, a place to apply my skills. And I sort of taught myself in the late 90s after school how to do web design, and I've been working as a web designer ever since. And that's about, well, that's almost 23 years ago now.
It's wild. So you actually saw the transition from web 1.0 to web 2.0.
Yeah. I was working at the time when that was going on.
Yeah. Sliders. Everybody wants sliders at that point.
Yeah, that's right. There was there was just more functionality, things that were possible with browsers. So when it was pretty limited before.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get into the questions, actually, that just brings to mind a thought I had. I was talking to some marketing people, and they sincerely believe that it was a better world for marketers in web 1.0 because things were cleaner and simpler. I don't know if you'd agree or disagree with that, but.
I can understand that point of view in that, we didn't have mobile design, so that would be the major drawback, that you can't really go back now because of everybody accessing with their phones and everything. You really couldn't go back to that sort of era and just do a retro site like that. I don't think it would work today.
Yeah. You almost have to design sites for mobile first and mobile second and mobile third now.
Yeah, that's a trend you'll see as a term like that, mobile first, and that's what it refers to, is you're looking at how is this going to work on the phone, and then you worry about the other larger platforms after that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so jumping into it then, I did come up with some questions. Paul and I talked ahead of time about what might be helpful for, in particular, the small business owner who's approaching their website and saying, what could we get changed? What could we polish up that would just give us that extra oomph in terms of business and customers and tangible results? So the first thing we're going to talk about today is the sort of visual real estate of a website. In other words, that every bit of space on your website could have value and have a use, but some of it has more value than others. So Paul, could you talk about, or give me your opinion on the most important visual real estate of a website and why?
Well, it's obviously, it tends to be near the top and left of the page, but they've done eye tracking research on this, actually, and they can show people different screens, track their eye movements, and then it shows a heat map of where people are looking. So whether or not it's showing where people look, which is what we're sort of interested in. So, and people tend to read pages in an F-shaped pattern. So they look at the top first, upper left, and they read from left to right. And then they go down the page and they start reading left to right. So most of the visual attention, if you're talking about, say, just a page with text and a fairly straightforward page, it's going to be in an F-shaped pattern where most of the visual attention of your viewer will be down the left side of the page.
Yeah, perfect. And then so you would, I guess that's why a lot of standard design puts the logo in the top left, because that's going to be the very first thing that most people's eyes is going to fall on.
Yeah, that's kind of become a standard thing. I do remember back a long time ago, when I started my career, we would put logos in lots of different places.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the left even. We were sort of making up, trying to figure out what worked at the time.
Yeah. I remember even, some of the early sites would have, which makes sense kind of when you think about it, it would have the main menu on the top left.
Right. Yeah. You would see all kinds of, but it's sort of become standard now. And that's where people expect to look to find, you know, identifying information as the top left.
Yeah, for sure.
Or, you know, logos can be centered too. If you're going to see a logo aligned, it's going to be to the left usually.
Yeah. And thinking about now this F pattern, just to clarify for folks too, when he's saying an F pattern, you know that the top line of the F is longer, right? Then the next line is a little shorter, and then there's no horizontal line after that. And what that's implying is that as people scan down the page, on average, they'll read less and less and less and see and look less and less and give you less of a chance. Now, what that's brought to mind is a concept from the old publishing days and newspaper days, which is called above the fold. And again, for folks, so we're not talking above folks' heads, can you just explain a little bit about the publishing concept of above the fold?
Okay. Above the fold is a term, I think, that comes from the newspaper business. When newspapers would be on a newsstand, they would be folded in half. And so what a potential customer would see would be what was above the fold. And that was, the most important part graphically or for somebody's first impression, because that will often decide whether or not they're going to buy a newspaper. They might not pick it up and flip it over and look beneath the fold. So that's kind of where that concept comes from. And I even remember one, I'm kind of rambling here, but I do remember the National Post, when they first introduced their paper, they had a newspaper box that showed you the entire front page of the newspaper, which was an innovation at the time, I guess.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's a way to get, again, to use that term, more real estate out there.
That's right.
So now we're taking this above the fold concept, and a lot of that did translate over into the internet world, at least in people's minds. So the idea was, you know, whatever size of the screen that you have, the section that people see first before they actually have to physically make a choice to scroll, that was seen as very valuable real estate. There may be a lot of validity to that, but I think you also had some comments on why website owners should not be obsessed with that.
Yeah, they've done a lot of research. We can track with analytics where people look, whether or not they even scroll a page. And what it's revealed is essentially that that sort of thinking is a little bit outdated. Almost everybody scrolls when they visit a page. It's very high percentage of people. So worrying about the sort of above the fold, although, you know, it is important to think about that, it's probably not as crucial as most people think. And I guess where I see a mistake being made with that thinking is trying to cram everything up above the fold, that, all the information, and sometimes it does get quite, it gets crammed up in there and cluttered. And then when you consider how is that going to look on a phone, which is much narrower, it can get really busy, and you can wind up with a header that might, you know, the actual content of your website doesn't really start after the header, and it might be way down on the phone or even off the screen if you're looking at it on a phone holding it vertically. It looks odd, it's just like every time you open a page, you're just sort of seeing a crammed up header that's, you know, sucking up a lot of the real estate on your phone,
which is also creating maybe more visual choices than the brain and the eye even wants to process. Like giving somebody too much choice in a sales environment, it's similar in a visual environment, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you'll often see that in a business, right? It's good, better, best, and they don't want to overwhelm you with a million choices sometimes, say. And that's true, I would say.
Perfect. I also think, just to point out to the listeners, that the interesting phenomenon about so many people using their mobile phones to browse online is that it is an absolutely accepted activity. In fact, I would theorize you get a dopamine drip from it, from scrolling on your phone.
Right.
Yeah. So we're trained now to scroll more than we ever have been.
Right. And I think where some of that thinking came from, the above the fold myth, as it's sometimes called, is from coming from people who maybe remember only surfing the web on their desktop. But you're right. I think people are very... users scroll. So it's really not a big deal to worry about. But if you have a special offer, you know, some pertinent piece of information, probably best to put it up near the top rather than, you know, you want your most, your number one piece of information probably be near the top, especially on the homepage.
Yep. Yeah. And as long as you're grabbing people, you know, you can listen to what Paul's saying. If you grab them when they come to your webpage, they're going to scroll down to read the full offer.
So that's right.
That's how we'll balance it out. We'll figure out what's most enticing or visually grabbing or mentally grabbing, and then let the pro like yourself lay out the rest of the stuff on the page because they will read it.
Yeah, and don't overwhelm them with too many ideas or concepts, which I think you just touched on too, is because you are trying to usually direct a visitor's attention to. Often it's just one thing or one main thing that you want them to do, either to click on an offer or join a mailing list or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, perfect. And I think that whole concept of visual busyness leads us into our next topic, which is kind of like the bane of designers everywhere. I put this in there as a little bit of an inside joke, but I think it relates to how the listeners maybe can think of the most effective ways to talk to their web host and their web designer to get the best results out of their website. So just to let you guys all in on a little joke, every time anyone builds a website, the number one request that comes back most often is to make the logo bigger. So Paul, I was wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about this phenomenon, why you think it exists, and why in most cases it's probably a little bit misguided.
It does, yeah. I don't know that I hear it every day. I definitely don't hear it every day, but it is something that does come up on occasion, and it's kind of a bit of a balancing act, because I think often when people get a logo, maybe they just got one made and they want to impress upon their visitors their new branding. They sort of might fall in love with the logo and they want it to take up the most amount of space, let's say. But it's probably not going to be the thing that is most interesting to the visitor. They probably didn't come to your site to see the logo. You know, they're probably there to see what offers you have or what you can do for them.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the pushback from business owners is, well, they need to know where they are. They need to know what company they're on. And I think oftentimes they forget that, like, they're not remembering their own customer journey. And I know as a customer myself, I'm not looking for a solution in most cases, I need a particular brand, right? Like if you're Nike versus Adidas, maybe. But on a small business level, it's more, I have a problem I need a solution for, not, you know, what did they use red or yellow in their iconography?
Yeah, I think the logo, the importance of the branding and the logo is going to be dependent on, you know, what field or what business you're in, because, you know, obviously for something like, you say, running shoes, branding is super important, but maybe for a plumber, it's not as important.
So the next question I wanted to ask you about is, and this one is a bit open-ended, so we can talk about it for a while here and from different angles if you like, but how can companies use graphics, you know, colors, visual balance on their website to show what I call proof elements or to establish proof? And just to give, again, a little bit of context, in marketing, we'll talk about proof elements being persuasion tools. So again, if somebody's trying to decide whether to go with your business or another business, sometimes you need to actually demonstrate the effectiveness of what you're offering as opposed to just claiming it, right? When you claim something is the best, that's much less powerful than, let's say, we embed a video on the homepage that demonstrates how the product works. Another example of a proof element could be if a celebrity endorses it or there's just a testimony in general. Things like that, right? A simplest example would be having a picture of the product as opposed to
before and after. Yeah,
exactly. So maybe we could talk a little bit about visuals as proof elements and how you, as an expert designer, use them.
Okay, well, usually when I'm looking at a design for the first time, where does my eye go first? What is the very first thing that my eye goes to? And not necessarily also just first, but where does my eye rest and where does it spend most of its time? And then where does it move from there? So you want to consider things like how... you know, the weight of these different visual elements. You might have a crest or a photograph or something, or And how do those, do they pop out? Do they recede into the background? Does it draw your attention? So say using, you have a site that's say a corporate blue sort of color, and you put a crest on it that says, you know, we've been in business for 12 years or 15 years, and it's bright red. Well, that's going to pull your attention right away because it's sort of a contrasting color to the rest of the site. But maybe you don't want to waste that attention grab on just letting them know that you've been around for 15 years. Maybe you want that that visual cue to go to some, you know, to your offer, like you say, or like what we were talking about before with the proof. You want, you know, to direct them to the most important part of what you're trying to convey.
It could say number one ranked real estate office for the last 10 years or something, as opposed to we've been in business for X years, right? Because then there's that
right.
proof element.
And, yeah. and you know, if you also probably you want to make it a clickable element, if it's something that you're putting a lot of energy into getting somebody's attention focused on, it might not, you know, it should be something. I think like something, probably a button or a contact, call to action or something like that.
Yeah. And the color contrast is obviously, as you said, it's so powerful. You would want to be very thoughtful about how you're going to use it on the page, and then probably only use it, you know, once, maybe max two times on any given page. And then the rest of the design is going to be, let's call it harmonious as opposed to contrasting. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. If you, I mean, you certainly, and I've seen it where some, where there's sort of a going overboard element with trying to put too many sort of things at the top of the visual hierarchy, let's say, where now you don't know where to look, you know, or maybe you're looking at the thing that's, you know, you would have your potential customer look at later on. Now they're focused on it and they don't understand the first part or something. You know, you want to make sure that it's comprehensible, I think, and not overwhelming people. I think the term I would use, it's just a balancing act, really.
For sure. Yeah. And then the other factor we haven't spoken about yet is that you also are on a limited time horizon. So people aren't going to stay on the page forever, right? They're going to, the term we use in stats, they're going to bounce off your page and go somewhere else. So that is a balancing act of how can you grab their attention, hold it, but then not fatigue it or chase them away.
That's right. I think that's a good point, as you don't want to fatigue them for sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then one of the other interesting things that you had sent me a photo before we got on the recording here. Now, it's going to be hard, obviously, for people who can't see it, but hopefully we can describe it about how you could use graphics in relation to text on a website page to draw people's attention to what you want them to read or look at.
Right. So we did talk about color and, you know, using a bright color, let's say, you know, the size of the element, different arrows and other things can be used to sort of direct people's attention. But the photo you're talking about is one of a baby, sitting next to the text. So we have sort of a two column layout where there's a baby on the left and the information is on the text information is on the right. And then there's two images showing, and they're the heat maps I was talking about before, where it tracks user eye movements. And in the first example, the baby is looking straight at you. And in the second example, the baby is actually turned to the right and is looking up at the text. And what you see in the two heat maps is that the one where the baby is actually looking at where you want your user to look holds their attention longer, and their eye movements stay, you know, those parts of the heat map are lit up more than on the other example on the left side.
Yeah. It's almost a cue rather than a grabber. Like we're talking about contrast grabbing people. This is now shuffling them along. Or like you used an example of using an arrow graphic that it happens so often on sales
yes.
letter pages because it's so effective.
And it's also, everybody knows what an arrow is for.
Yeah.
And like in this baby example, where you have the subject of the photo looking in the direction that you want your user to look, like you say, it's more of a nudge rather than a sort of, it's a nudge. It's not really like a heavy duty kind of thing, like where you would have a big red crest, let's say.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. In the audio world, they often talk about how, you know, if you do a great visual job, everyone notices and praises the visual artist. But in the audio world, if you do a great job, that should mean no one notices the audio.
Right.
So that's an interesting, yeah, these nudges should be almost imperceptible or almost subconscious. And that's what I find with a really great designer. They're doing both things that you said, right? There's a lot of standout flashy elements because obviously everyone wants to have a site that's attractive, that they're proud of. But what's far more important and much more unsung are all these little subconscious arrangements, which leads me into one of the final things. A lot of times feedback to designers will be, why is there so much white on the screen? And so, So that's the white space. So if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's another thing that it is another balancing act. You know, like we were talking earlier with the mobile header, you don't want to be overwhelming people or cramming in too much stuff. So white space gives, you know, the eye a place to sort of rest a little bit, or to, you know, the elements you want people to look at, they're going to be more focused on that because it's coming off of a white, with it has some space around it and it's not crowded out. So that's sort of the reason behind it. I mean, you can definitely go overboard with white space, and then, you know, the different elements that should be sort of connected on your page are now two separate. So, you know, usually though, the tendency for people is to want to cram in stuff, like they're trying to put, you know, 10 pounds of dirt in a 5-pound bag is sort of, you know, a way of looking at it.
Do you find that it's an entirely different consideration when you're dealing with balance and white space on the mobile display as opposed to, say, a large widescreen HD desktop display?
Yeah, that's a good observation. Yeah, there's obviously a lot more with a desktop, so you have more room to play with. And on a mobile, often the images get removed or truncated or replaced with something that's smaller or doesn't take up as much real estate. You know, you might just have a different choice of image that would show up when somebody's looking at it on the phone to accommodate sort of the new screen size.
Would you generally be a fan of, say, if somebody, or when you look at that version of widescreen where there's so much unused real estate on the left and right hand side of the browser window, are you a fan of making that, you know, putting something in there like a background color or pattern or something just for that view, which obviously isn't going to show up on mobile because there is not that space?
Right. So yeah, we use the term white space, but really white space just means any sort of place that doesn't have like attention grabbing detail. So it could be a color, actually, like a colored background or something like that, or even a subtle pattern that you could count as white space also.
I think that would, especially for clients who only have a widescreen monitor and they're not considering, like you are, all these different views, that might be less shocking for them to see that, like there's something there in their brain as opposed to empty whiteness.
Yeah, often what I'll do is I'll have a, when you see the website on a large desktop display, there'll be a big image, let's say, and as you pull out your phone or you shrink the window, you'll see that a lot of that image is disappearing. I might even put a background color behind it to give the text more contrast with the background. When you're on mobile, you tend to need a little more contrast because often people are outside or they're in high light environments, and you can't really go super subtle with, you want a little more contrast when somebody's on a phone usually.
Interesting. Yeah, I never thought about that. Well, we covered some of the high level topics of way people could approach and look at web design and how we look at it. And then, you know, there's always that back and forth between client and designer to come up with the best outcome. The final word goes to you, Paul. Is there anything you'd like to sort of put a point on when it comes to web design for small businesses?
Well, I think, I think we've covered it pretty good. I wouldn't want to overwhelm people. I do think that we touched on that with the above the fold and that sort of thing, where we're trying to put too much into a page. And I have some sites that I've worked on in the past where, yeah, they really got top heavy essentially, and that would be something I would try to avoid and rather use more of these subtle direct, you know, trying to direct people's attention to the thing that's most important rather than, say, 10 different you know, sections of your website or whatever.
Yeah. And yeah, not even, and even it doesn't have to maybe be all on the homepage. You can have separate pages for singular ideas that are important to your customers. And that's not going to chase, right? Not going to chase people away. You might even give them the direct link to that page. Because I think another thing Ryan and I talk about a lot is people maybe don't consider how little cold traffic comes to the homepage of a small business website, right? It might come to an e-commerce website or someone who's just a blogger or whatever, but a lot of small business websites have many different points of entry for many different types of customers. So they don't have to panic if you can't fit every element on the homepage, because there's probably a more appropriate place inside the website.
That's right. I think we worked on a project like that where we were doing multiple landing pages. So there was different, like you say, points of entry, and there would be completely different pages set up for, you know, different audiences.
That's awesome. Paul, I appreciate your time today. Thanks for coming out and chatting with me.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad we got to do this.
If you're not satisfied with your current website or the service you get from your provider, you can switch to websites.ca for free and get a great support team behind you. Just visit websites.ca or email Ryan directly at ryan@websites.ca.
Thanks for listening, guys. Catch you next time.